I can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. Yeah, when the rain.
What will be the memory of Joe Biden? His farewell address yesterday, I think, does leave us some crumbs and a little bit of a wonder. What if he was this clear all the time? Right? Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation. I've got the conversation started with my fabulous guest co-host. He's with me every Thursday. His name's Tom Paulswitz, a two-time congressional candidate and an all-around reasonable guy with whom I don't always agree, which is not when we have those little differences. I enjoy that, Tom. I think it brings some zip to our miracle whip of this show. Let's start. I thought overall takes on Biden's farewell speech. Mm-hmm. Where was this guy? Like, where was the clarity about the threats? And I know he got there towards the end of Harris's campaign, but the use of the word oligarchy, for example, was just some additional. It just seemed clearer to me about where our choices may lead us, where our choices have led us. Folks, you want to join this conversation about Biden's farewell address, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Did it resonate for you? Do you think it will be sort of the bookend on his legacy? Tom, what were your immediate reactions?
Well, I think he said a lot of the right things, but, you know, part of what he was able to do was use 2020 hindsight. You know, he was mm-hmm. now able to take a step back and look at it and say, all right, here's not only what happened, but here's what happened since the election. I mean, I've been racking my brain. I don't think Trump ever mentioned Greenland and Panama.
Yeah, missed that.
Anytime during the, you know, it's almost like Scott Walker not even mentioning the fact that he's going to institute Act 10 and then deciding to do it right after the election, right? It's like, okay, if you really thought that was important, maybe that was a good thing to bring to the public before you decided to talk about it.
Right.
So, and then as far as the oligarchy goes, I think, you know, it's become much more clear. And to me, this is one of the things that I think is the most dangerous thing happening right now is Trump has sent word through him and his minions that unless you bring a check, sort of like the mob, unless you bring a check, we're not going to be as open to whatever it is you want to talk about, including when I institute tariffs, carving out whatever your industry or whatever your business is. So, and those things are much more clear today than they were even in November and in August.
Total agreement. What your description is conjuring up for me, like the Donald Trump 47th presidential inauguration, having some weird meme like take that's like the movie Godfather. You come to me on the day of my granddaughter. Where is my envelope of money? Oh, wait, Zuckerberg's already given the envelope. He's throwing him a black tie party. You've got like 4 or 5 billionaires that's basically going to be in the family section.
Right. Yes! There's a satin sack that JD Vance is holding.
put your
and everybody's putting
there,
their little envelope, right? And they're kissing his ring and going, hey, remember me.
I need this favor now.
Right.
Yes. I mean, seriously, like someone out there in the blogosphere who's good at meme making, you can use my idea. Just give me a little credit, little drop of foot at Maggie Dawn Show. Yeah, it's.
So there's more clarity there, you know, but when I think of Joe Biden, you know, and I can't help but think of Jimmy Carter at the same time because their careers were so in sync. But, you know, starting off elected to Congress at 28, you know, and now having been president for 4 years, he's been part of the fabric of Washington, D.C. when it comes to Democrats for a long, long time. Yeah. And, you know, and I am still, I think if we could somehow keep him as foreign minister, I think that would benefit all of us. But I know that's not going to happen, or it's not even, you know, but if he could still back channel and use his relationships that he's built over the years, you know, I love that you say, where's this guy been? You know, and I think at the age of 82, you have moments of clarity and sometimes you have some trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a great moment of clarity last night where he was able to actually articulate, and he wasn't, you know, part of his stutter, you know, holds, it makes him seem like he's searching or looking when it has nothing to do with the way his brain works. It has everything to do with the connection between his brain and his ability to say what he needs to say. So I think that element came through in his speech. But I think overall, though, you know, I think we're going to look back and go, thank goodness for Joe Biden. Because he was part of the country at some critical points. He moved forward gay marriage, right? I mean, it was stuck until Joe Biden opened his mouth and said, no, we got to do something about this and we should start now.
I think that historically, overall, his presidency will get favorable marks.
Yes.
I do think there were some stumbles along the way. But let's listen to a little bit of what our outgoing president had to say last night in his farewell address. And let's start with that warning about an American oligarchy. Cardi?
Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms, and a fair shot for everyone to get ahead.
And that's what we're seeing. What I heard reporting again in the hour before I got on the show, that now Donald Trump is agitating for Vivek Ramaswamy to take J.D. Vance's Senate seat because Donald Trump wants someone with an official platform that's part of this kind of Doge movement. And it's like, you know what we need less of in our government? Billionaires. Like, yeah. What new value is Vivek Ramaswamy going to bring to the Senate? Like, there's enough really, really, really rich people in the Senate. Just ask Ron Johnson.
Well, this is, you know, part of it is an oligarchy, but the other part of it is these people know each other, right? Yeah. And they all think smart, and they all think they have the right solutions. You know, this is the opposite of DEI. This is promoting people who you know and you think they're smart, but don't have any qualifications to be able to actually do the job that you want them to do.
And it's like, go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
But it's fascinating to me. Like, you can be so against DEI, but it's okay to take a guy like Pete you
right. know. Quit saying the word meritocracy. It doesn't look good on you, Pete.
Right. It doesn't. But the flip side of that is, it's like, you know, the whole point of DEI was to say, let's get people in front or out there that we normally wouldn't look at because they're smart. They have a different perspective. They'll bring something different to the table. Instead, we're going to get the same stuff over and over again. I'm a billionaire. I must be smart. And therefore, I must be able to solve these intractable solutions that unfortunately require a bit of empathy, which I clearly lack.
I have none. No, I have none. I wouldn't ever think that, like, I'm the beneficiary of an unmeritocratic system of promoting underqualified, you know, personally loyal white people into jobs that they have no business doing. That couldn't possibly be the case.
Never happened. Right.
Let's take a little bit more of President Biden's farewell address last night. Pivoting from the oligarchy to the tech industrial complex. Let's take a listen.
Potential rise of a tech industrial complex that could pose real dangers for our country as well. Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power.
And it's that last part that's so critical, right? And this is what, you know, first of all, I don't actually think when Mark Zuckerberg says, oh, this is all about returning to our free speech roots. No, it's about you trying to meet chicks in college. So you created a thing called Facebook. Like, that's what it was.
You stole the thing called Facebook.
Yeah, from two other guys.
Yes.
But it's also, even in its current iteration, it's not about free speech. We actually give away our right to privacy and to protect the data footprint that we create when we are on these platforms. They monetize and sell that. That's not free speech.
Right. If you're on the platform, you're helping to make them money.
Correct.
Now,
I will also point out
there's a new term that they're using, free expression. and one of the things I wanted to ask you, Maggie, being an attorney, is, are they using the phrase free expression because free speech has some legal parameters around it?
Yeah,
because
might be that. But, like, even, you know, like, so, yeah, we have to give away our privacy rights and the rights to basically control and own our own data footprint, which we're creating, which is what they monetize. It's also not free because it's manipulated. Like, we're so far from the literal soapbox, right? The expression, get off your soapbox was because people would use the box that soap was transported and flip it upside down, stand in the park square and pontificate what their views were.
Yes.
Right. This isn't that. That is, well, let me manipulate which town square speaker you hear to sell you stuff. Like, what part of that is free expression?
To get you to engage, and the more that you engage, the more that you can sell. Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I've been wrestling with this. You know, I have a Facebook account.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go back and forth. I deleted my Instagram because one, I don't use it that much anyways. I got out of Twitter at least like a year and a half ago because I knew it was becoming a cesspool. I just signed up for Blue Sky. I don't use it that much yet, but I'm in it. But here's the thing. I found out today that a friend of mine who I've known for a while in DC fell and hit his head and is now in the hospital. And I wouldn't have known that unless I was on Facebook.
Right.
And so the power, the ability to connect and the ability to bring people together that I think is the best part of Facebook. Is there a way to capture that and then not get into
the nonsense,
right? Into the gutter of manipulating us and bringing us into disinformation and all that. And it, you know, I'm calling out to see if there are any actually moral billionaires out there who want to actually create a platform that we can use for the good of society.
And you know, please don't call and tell me Warren Buffett, because his 50% rule isn't really the thing, because he hasn't given away any of it. Right.
Right. And Warren's not going to build anything anyways. But to me, the biggest part of this is how do we stay connected in a way that uses these tools of the times that we live in without it dragging us down to the lowest common denominator? I think that's the biggest struggle that as a society we have when it comes to how do we take these things and use them for good. You know, I'm in the rare position to be able to go find news. I read a whole bunch of stuff from a whole bunch of different places and then critically think about what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. But I have a lot of time to do that. Most people don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have a couple of different news feeds and you tend to believe whatever's in front of you, that's how we got into this situation in the first place.
The next one of the other remarkable warnings from Joe Biden in his farewell address was on climate. Let's take a listen.
The powerful forces want to wield their unchecked influence to eliminate the steps we've taken to tackle the climate crisis, to serve their own interest for power and profit. We must not be bullied into sacrificing the future of our children and our grandchildren. We must keep pushing forward. And push faster.
Again, this weird echo with President Carter and all of what he did on environmental issues. It's just, I feel like every day, Tom, I'm stumbling over a bit of our past that tells me about our present, that tells me some warnings about our future. And of course, coinciding with this rise of an oligarchy, which I've said, you know, that is incompatible with our capitalistic democracy, but an oligarchy at least is a system. And the thing that worries me most is that we seem to be drifting even away from a system of governance and into transactional access, and that it, you know, it's just a system. There's all kinds of treats and desserts on the tableau, and they're just going to be meted out to the most powerful and wealthy among us with no concern for those very futures that Joe Biden just invoked.
Right. And these industries, you know, as they're giving a donation to the inauguration, are saying, these are the regulations I would like to see disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And it, how that cannot be trading financial, you know, financial gain for political power is beyond me. But I think the bigger issue here is we do not price the cost of climate or a whole bunch of things into the economy.
Yeah.
And the way we've done that is through regulations to make sure businesses follow the rules. And by stripping that away, they will be able to make even more money and cause more harm.
And we're going to come back to that idea, because as an economist, I actually studied this idea of negative environmental externalities in regression analysis. So, of course, I got to bring some wonk and some nerdy. Keep it locked. We're going to pick right back up there. Why the billionaire class is stealing your children's future with Tom Paulswitz. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.